Good afternoon, this is Linda Galash, and you're listening to the January 20th, 2012 edition of Catalyst Radio, the weekly public affairs radio program of Community Media Center, focusing on local efforts and media-related information. CMC's Catalyst Radio brings you interviews with organizations and people working on social change, community support, and media issues. And today on Catalyst Radio, we discuss two congressional bills with potential effects of limiting an open and free internet that are facing a public outcry of opposition. The bills known as Stop Online Piracy, or SOPA, in the House and Protect IP Act, or PIPA, in the Senate are purported to be anti-piracy efforts to aid in large part the U.S. movie and music industry. As part of the opposition to the proposed legislation, a web blackout was staged on Wednesday with more than 10,000 web service providers participating. Leaders in the action included Wikipedia, reported to be the sixth most visited site in the world, Reddit, and Boing Boing, but also included notables such as Flickr, Tumblr, Mozilla, and Vimeo. Community Media Center also participated with a blackout of the main CMC website, as well as of the online citizen journalism website, The Rapidian. Today we speak with Lori Cervello, CMC's executive director, about the potential implications of the bill and the decision to join in the action. Today on Catalyst Radio, we welcome to the studio our very own, it's Executive Director Lori Cervello, Executive Director of Community Media Center, and there's a reason, Lori, you are in the studio today. There's a lot of talk and a lot of action going on this week because of some bills making it through Congress that have people upset about freedom of speech, in a sense, net neutrality, and anti-piracy efforts.
Yes, it's a very busy week this week, and this has actually been going on for a while, but it's hitting a bit of a crescendo as two bills are making their way through the House and Senate at the federal level, that while they are purportedly intended to address internet piracy, are really bringing up some serious issues about the future of the internet as we know it, and how that relates to free speech and participation by everyone in the conversations of the day. The two acts in question are the Stop Online Piracy Act, also known as SOPA, and the Protect IP Act, known as PIPA.
So, respectively, that's the House version and the Senate version. And on Wednesday of this week, there was enough excitement over these, in a negative sort of way, to cause about 10,000 or more websites to go dark in protest of these, including our websites, community media centers.
Absolutely. And, you know, we are very interested in transparency as an organization. And sometimes it is necessary to alert people to issues that may impact the media and their ability to participate. And so as an organization that values free speech and that really looks to remove barriers to participation by diverse voices, we felt it was really important to participate in this, what I like to think of is an opportunity to turn on the lights by turning off our website. Rather than sort of tell everybody what they should think, we have taken an opportunity to provide people with encouragement to pause and to look at a variety of sources so they can learn more about both sides of this issue and really come to their own conclusions. As an organization, we often are looking at issues that can negatively affect average folks and how they go about doing business and how they go about getting information and participating in conversation. And we feel that this is one of those times where we need to encourage people to, you know, scrutinize some things that are going on in our government related to free speech.
Well, at first glance, it may seem a bit ironic that all these websites going dark in the name of free speech. So explain a little bit about the philosophy or the purpose in this method.
Well, I think the philosophy is really to, in a bit of an obvious way, to encourage people to think for a moment what it would be like if the internet as we have come to know it was no more. And if particularly sites that welcome voices and include the community broadly no longer were able to do that. Taking a leadership role in this idea was Wikipedia, probably the largest, but others such as Reddit and Craigslist and many, many others have come on board, if you will, to lend their voices to this issue. The idea of going black was really to say, hey, you know, if certain things occur, intended or not, bad things can happen. And things that we've come to count on, particularly those that welcome many, many voices, could be threatened in a way that could really make them go dark.
So with Wikipedia being something like the sixth most visited site in the world and other sites like Google and Mozilla doing levels of the blackout and using this as a tool to educate, do educate us just a little bit on the reason such groups would take this action. How would it affect Wikipedia, for example, and then even on to Community Media Center and the efforts that this organization does?
Well, I am not going to suggest that I can say, you know, to have a crystal ball that says this is exactly how things would be affected. But there is enough concern about the broad-reaching language in these bills that instead of merely addressing serious issues of internet piracy, that either one of these bills, if they became law or a combined version of them became law, would create a climate of threat and liability that would make it nearly impossible for sites that encourage and count on user participation and user-generated content to be able to operate, flourish, and innovate, which is innovation is very important when it comes to Wikipedia. Wikipedia is a project where thousands and thousands of people, millions of people, help contribute to this continually growing body of common knowledge about everything from, you know, the history of India to, you know, what is a bouillabaisse? I mean, very broad ranging. And it counts on the wisdom and the collective wisdom of many, many people. So it is heavily user content generated. I mean, that's how it functions. If you look at that on a smaller scale, something like the Rapidian, which is a project of the Community Media Center, it's a citizen journalism platform. So we work with residents and citizens to collect the news and present the news and provide content. And we're certainly, you know, not in favor of piracy. We're not in favor of copyright infringement or anything like that. But when you have a bill that requires an incredible level of policing and scrutiny far beyond your own website, it puts sites like the Rapidian and as big as Wikipedia in a position where fear and liability is going to stifle our ability to serve. And it's very simple in those terms.
Well, bills do adapt and change as they go through the process on their way to becoming a law. But as things stand this week, SOPA and PIPA, what are some of the specific provisions that would actually have this sort of effect? For example, you mentioned having the burden put on, say, somebody like Wikipedia that would make them responsible for any link, for example, or the user-generated content. How would this happen like that?
Well, you know, I was reading, as we were determining whether or not this was something that we wanted to participate in and encourage scrutiny of, I was reading some information from Wikipedia and talking about how SOPA, for instance, would require Wikipedia to actively monitor every site, not just their own, but every site they link to ensure that there's nothing on their hosting infringing copy or content. Any link to an infringing site, a single link, could put the whole project of Wikipedia in jeopardy. Now, if you consider the cost and the difficulty, strictly from an architectural standpoint of the internet, of trying to do that is almost overwhelming. And so there is that issue. There's the provisions about blacklisting sites, which means that sites that have been accused, but not necessarily proven, to have copyright infringing material could be eliminated from showing up in search engines, which definitely could limit people's access to information. And I think, you know, absolutely there are provisions that put the burden onto website owners to police all user contributed material, and really calls for the unnecessary blocking of entire sites. Small sites will not be able to deal with this. You know, even a small site has to have liability insurance, and, you know, we try to be very, very careful. But if each one of us are going to be responsible for the good or bad behavior of every single piece of information that we are connected to on the internet, that seems to be an impossibility that will do nothing but stifle speech.
So this seems to come under the heading of a net neutrality issue, and with net neutrality kind of being defined as the idea that companies providing internet services, ISPs or search engines or things like that, or the means to get to the internet are not blocked in any way. This is requiring some blocking, that everyone would not have the same access. The risks in the past that have come under net neutrality risks have been, what if a competitor? What if, say, Comcast is my provider of internet service and they don't want me to be able to search out other sites? So these proposed bills actually do have a little bit to do with net neutrality. How far does it go in that direction?
Well, you know, there's actually a piece of this that is being coined, termed the vigilante provision. And, you know, this has received a lot of attention in that it would really grant broad immunity to any service provider if they overblock innocent users or block sites voluntarily with absolutely no judicial oversight. In other words, a company could say, hey, you know, we think that there might be a chance that this has some copyright infringement somewhere down the line, so we're going to block this site. Now, on its face, you say, okay, well, companies should be able to do that. However, what happens when it is in their financial interest to block sites? And frankly, the excuse can simply be that there might be some liability or there might be a problem, and they don't have to prove anything. And I think it opens a very wide back door into attacking net neutrality, which has been, and I believe continues to be, a fundamental feature of an open and robust internet.
So net neutrality, again, that's the larger issue here. And a lot of it has to do with the financial end of things, as I was saying earlier. And you were pointing out at one point that it is actually a stifling as well of the free market in a way. Tie that together if you can kind of make that connection.
Well, there's actually been a number of groups, venture capital groups, that have come out, and they have said basically en masse that they're not going to invest in online startups. They're not going to invest in innovation if PIPA or SOPA or versions thereof pass and become law, because the liability is too high, because no one is going to invest in innovation if they think that there is this incredibly deep, far-reaching, and very broad liability that could cause them financial loss. So even in the free hand of the marketplace is not served by this, let alone the populist voice that has been empowered through the internet as it is today. It basically will stifle innovation. You know, fear stifles creativity. And this bill, because it is vague, it is broad-reaching, absolutely, I believe, will threaten internet innovation, which is how the internet has become what it is today.
And if you're just joining us, Catalyst Radio, today, we're talking about pending legislation making its way through both houses of Congress, having to do with what is said to be stopping online piracy. We're talking today with Lori Cervello, Executive Director of Community Media Center, and Community Media Center's participation in a blackout earlier this week in protest of such legislation and the effects of that legislation. Lori, let's talk a little bit about where this legislation stands right now. Within the past week, it's kind of really boiled to the top, to the surface. There's been some changes made, some reports, premature maybe, of the death of parts of them. Where does it stand?
Well,
where's it going?
And again, this is a moving target. So by the time you hear my voice, you know, by the time it got from here to you, you know, to someone else, this could change. The most recent information that I have is that the SOPA bill has been put on a temporary hold. Some people have claimed that it has died. Others are saying, no, it's just in a holding pattern.
And the main sponsor is Lamar Smith out of Texas, and he's reportedly said that it will resume markup hearings in February. So a little premature report of its death, possibly.
Yes, and there is discussion and pressure for PIPA to be actually brought to a vote, an initial vote next week in the Senate. And however, you know, there is some discussion throughout sort of the blackout efforts that some of the original sponsors of some of these are now actually having some second thoughts, which I think is really encouraging. It is not law yet, but it is a topic, whether we're talking SOPA and PIPA or some other version, that when we look to create remedies to real problems, and internet piracy is a real problem. When we look to create those remedies, they have to be so carefully and specifically carved out as with a scalpel. But some people have really characterized this as taking a chainsaw into the operating room, because the far-reaching consequences are devastating, and there's real question on whether it would actually have any real effect on what the original problem was of internet piracy.
Without doubting that internet piracy is a problem or an issue, there is a lot of mass opposition to these two bills. Who is in favor of this?
Well, some of the groups or the entities, motion picture distributors, large music holding corporations, who have concerns about their materials being used and them not being compensated for it. Those have really been the entities that have been most observable and vocal as proponents of this.
The mass outcries have apparently had some effect, at least with delaying and changing the versions of this. Let's bring it back home a little bit more, though. Let's talk about what Community Media Center does, and we did discuss a little bit about how this would affect parts of what this organization does, but the boldness of Community Media Center to take a stand like this, how does this fit into the mission? How would it have affected the mission at large?
Well, first, I think it's important to understand why we care, and second, why we took the particular tact that we did. First of all, we are, as an organization, dedicated to removing barriers to participation for people in community conversation. We promote civic engagement. We believe that every voice should have the opportunity to be heard, and that more speech is better speech. And all of these things really are at the heart of what we do, whether we are helping people create videos to promote their nonprofit cause or to bring their church services into the homes of shut-ins. Those are all opportunities for people, regular folks, nonprofits, local organizations, to use the tools of media and technology to connect with others, build community, build bridges between communities. This is all very important to us. So we're very much about empowerment of the individual voice. So when something comes up that really becomes, we believe, a threat to that, it's important that we, first of all, learn as much as we can, but also to encourage that community of voices to learn what they need to know to make informed decisions. So when the blackout was announced, we took a very specific tact in that on our website was an explanation of why we were taking this action of blacking out our website and providing people with a variety of resources where they could go to learn more, including actual links to the bills. And so we're trying to be as balanced as we can, because we believe that when the lights are turned on and issues are truly transparent and people have access to good information on both sides, there's the best opportunity for people to come up with a decision or an opinion that is in the best interests of community. So we say our role is very important to educate and to encourage people to become engaged in issues that can truly affect their lives and to affect their ability to speak for themselves.
So describe exactly what occurred with this blackout. You're mentioning shining a light in this blackout. So with somebody going to our site, grcmc.org or wyce.org or therapidian.org, what was it that was seen at that point?
During this 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., a visitor would basically, instead of seeing our normal website or seeing the Rapidian or seeing WYCE's website, would see a statement from the Community Media Center explaining that what was happening, that in many sites were going dark, and we feel this is an important issue, and we feel that we, as a free speech organization, need to inform people about this, and we ask people to take a moment to learn more, and we provide them with those links.
Do you see that as a controversial move?
Not really. I mean, I suppose in some senses, whenever you appear to and or do take a stand, someone can disagree with you, and that's fine. I think, however, we took a very well-reasoned approach to this. I don't believe it's ever should be controversial to provide people with more opportunity to learn, consider, and scrutinize what is being done with our communication systems. So is that controversial? I think it's responsible, actually, on our part. And we have not told anybody what they must think. We have stated an opinion. We think this is a very important issue that needs good public scrutiny.
So this topic of free speech is fairly heavy, although we do consider ourselves to be right in the middle of it, and Community Media Center being that's its purpose as a daily process, not just when some of these things come up. Talk a little bit about what Community Media Center does in an everyday way having to do with free speech or platform or giving voice.
In everything we do at the Community Media Center, we're constantly looking at ways to empower people to speak for themselves and also to reduce barriers. And we consider ourselves to be really a servant leader in community communications, especially on the local and regional level. So if you look at our services and how those values are lived out, take the Rapidian. It is citizen journalism based. We've just now launched our fifth neighborhood-based news bureau, where we actually help smaller communities within the community leverage citizen journalism platforms to report the things that are important to them in their community. And that's one example in providing tools and training and mentorship. When it comes to the artistic voice, we have a wonderful local music scene, and artists shouldn't have to be on a big label or be one of a very abbreviated approved song list for commercial media in order to be heard. And coming up next month, we have the Jammies, which is just such a great event that WYCE puts on, and on the 14th of February, that really honors and spotlights local and emerging musicians and really helps that artistic voice be supported and helps that expression. GRTV has a long history of giving people the tools and the training and the resources and the know-how to be able to use the extremely powerful tools of video to express themselves, to create conversations, to connect people at home with coverage of issues and events that are going on in the community. Our IT services department, does incredible service for the nonprofit sector, helping, struggling and small nonprofits as well as large ones best use media and technology to deliver services, to help people who need services understand where they can get them and how they can access them. And then, of course, we have Wealthy Theater, which, unlike any theater I know anywhere, is a community-programmed venue. In other words, we provide the welcome, we provide the professional services, we provide the venue and the platform for everything from lectures to concerts to films and discussions that go along with those films. So again, it is are the voices of this community that are amplified through all the services that we do. And we truly believe that's living our values of elevating every voice and providing opportunities for everyone, regardless of power, money, or status, to contribute robustly to the conversation of the day.
Laura Cervello, Executive Director of Community Media Center, on anti-piracy legislation pending and on all the free speech efforts of Community Media Center. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure.
music featured this week from jazz musician Mark Rossi with the song Free Speech Zone. You have been listening to Catalyst Radio, your local public affairs radio program focusing on media issues and community efforts. We broadcast weekly. It's Fridays, noon to 12:30 on Community Media Center's radio station, WYCE. Archives of the shows can be found on our website, and that site is grcmc.org. You can also go to therapidian.org, where the show is archived. You can also go to grcmc.org and learn about all the different programs and opportunities offered here at Grand Rapids Community Media Center. With audio editing from Matt Gerrals, I'm Linda Galash, and this is 88.1 FM WYCE, Wyoming, Grand Rapids.
This is Diana Barrett of the Grand Rapids Historical Commission. It's been a pleasure to work with WYCE and Grand Rapids Community Media Center to bring you Glance at the Past. Thank you for listening to these little-known stories about the history of our city, and I hope you will continue to follow them in the future. Hear Glance at the Past on WYCE Wednesdays and Sundays at 8:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m., or find podcasts on our website, historygrandrapids.org.
Hi, this is Kevin Murphy, the station manager here at WYCE. You know, we've made a commitment these past few years to do as little on-air fundraising as possible, knowing that you, our listener sponsors, will do your part to keep up your end of the bargain. Well, you know, one way that you can do that is to become a member of WYCE's Sustaining Circle. This is an ongoing giving program that allows you to make a regular monthly contribution from your checking or savings account. It's very easy to do. It's the easiest way to continue WYCE support throughout the year. If you'd like to find out about this, you can contact a WYCE staff member at 616-459-4788. Support WYCE throughout the year. Become a member of the Sustaining Circle.